Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Who could turn the world on with her smile and accomplish so much on and off camera? Mary Tyler Moore did. We'll celebrate her television life with the author of You're Going to Make It After All, the new MTM biography. Mark Shapiro joins me next. There's a serial terrorist out there, and it may take a combination of virtual reality and artificial intelligence and two brothers coming forward to end his bombing spree. In the Cloud debuts tomorrow on Crackle. More on this original movie next half hour from executive producers Brian Kavanaugh-Jones and Justin Levy. Also ahead, could we see a universe of live-action Star Wars television? Go USA goes on, how Universal Super Bowl did, and our newest classic trivia question of the week winner. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, proud development partner of the New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. Glad to have you with us for the program All About Television. 33 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. A lot of rain here in the Big Apple. Rain, snow, and ice all over the up and down the East Coast. If you're in that vicinity with the snow and the ice, please be careful. Take it easy. If you're traveling, take extra time. And if you're going somewhere by rail or by air, please check the carrier before you go. Great hour in store for you. It gets better when you are involved. So if you have a question or comment for our guest, pick up the phone, up the voice, use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number's good anywhere. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. Got the chat room going as well, Simon Apple 04 by name. And if you can use that, we will get you on the air. While the program is on the air, you can connect to others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions of this live with you. Want to also welcome everybody who's joining us on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And in here bio author Mark Shapiro will join us from Los Angeles after these news notes. Disney blasts off a family-centric probing service directed to smart TV sets and TVS devices late next year. Will the force be with us in a big way? You bet, answered Bob Iger, Disney's chief executive. He's talking more than one live-action Star Wars series for that to be named service. Addressing investors at a conference call yesterday, Iger expects to name at least one entity working on Star Wars series soon. He adds that the level of interest among the production community in doing original TV series and movies for the service is quite high. Breaking news earlier this afternoon, CBS has greenlighted a new global talent competition series organized by Survival creator and current MGM TV president Mark Burnett and Warner Brothers. The World's Best, that's the name of the show, will feature performers of every talent genre who must pass muster with not only a trio of judges, but 50 experts from around the world. Burnett will co-produce the series, where he, as I said, with MGM Television, where he serves as president. Now, some quickies. Universal Super Bowl 52 coverage in Spanish drew nearly 1.4 million viewers Sunday night, a 10% more audience than Universal's first Super Bowl, Espanol Simulcast, 3 years ago. BattleBots will return for a third season rendition later this spring. Both Discovery Channel and Science Channel will present this new set of episodes at ABC carried BattleBots in 2015-16 at the Comedy Central's two-season run the previous decade. Go USA Television launched this morning on Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, and Roku. The service presents short and long-form videos on travel adventures around the nation. And ABC made a TV milestone last night when Fresh Off the Boat featured a storyline presented entirely in Mandarin Chinese with English subtitles. Better writer Jeff Chiang with that episode. And that is news notes for today. The number of people, specifically the number of women, who have impacted television both on and off camera in the first few decades of this medium's existence, you can count basically on one hand. One was Lucille Ball, which with her then-husband, Debbie Arnaz, not only did three wonderful back-to-back-to-back comedy hits in I Love Lucy, The Lucy Show, and Here's Lucy on CBS. She, of course, was the co-founder and the operator of Debbie Lou, which at one point was the biggest independent producer of television series on the planet. Another with Mary Tyler Moore. On camera, of course, she burst out going in the 60s as Laura Petrie on The Dick Van Dyke Show. But it was in the 1970s that she really blossomed on camera with The Mary Tyler Moore Show. And she empowered women all over the place with a very neat portrayal of the woman who made it big, after all, in Minneapolis on a local television station in news. But that was not all. MTM was also the first entry in MTM Enterprises, the production company she founded with her then-husband, Grant Tinker. And before that was over with, it gave us some of the finest moments in both television, comedy, and drama for the next 2 decades, from the Bob Newhart Show and Newhart to Rhoda to Hill Street Blues and much, much more. Now there's a biography about MTM. It's called You're Going to Make It After All, based on the last line of Love Is All Around, the famous Sonny Curtis penned and sung theme song to The Mary Tyler Moore Show. Joining us live from Los Angeles, the author of that book, New York Times bestselling writer, Mark Shapiro. Mark, good to have you aboard.
Great. Thanks for having me.
What got you interested in MTM? What got you interested in doing a bio on MTM?
First off, I'm obviously a fan. I'm old enough to remember Mary Tyler Moore way back in the day when she started her career as the happy hot point dancing elf and obviously went on from there. Fan first, wanted to do a book on her for a while, wanted to do a different kind of book. Obviously, there's a lot of things people know about Mary Tyler Moore. I felt there was a lot that needed to be explored further.
It's been over a year since she passed away from pneumonia at the age of 80, Mark. How does her legacy stand up, both on camera and even more so off camera?
Mary Tyler Moore's legacy is that of a woman very talented and very much of her time. She came of age as a performer at a time when the entertainment industry in general was undergoing a lot of changes socially, politically, and any other ways. She basically became a personality, sometimes a reluctant personality, but a personality who was carrying the torch for a lot of hopes and dreams for a lot of women. To a large extent, she's remembered for that. She's also known as somebody who was willing to take a chance with her career and her life. Wasn't always successful. There were some bumps in the road. But at the end of the day, she did things her way.
Mm-hmm. How did she make the transition from that happy hot point girl who was in those hot point appliance commercials? Those don't know, it was in the 50s on the Ozzie and Harriet comedy program, the longest running, by the way, as it turned out in television history, to having her breakthrough as Laura Petrie on The Dick Van Dyke Show?
Initially, she was just another working actress, on a quite successful one. You could put any show on during the late 50s into the early 60s, and you would see her guest starring on things like Richard Diamond, Private Detective, Johnny Staccato, 77 Sunset Strip, you name it, she was there. Eventually, she started going up for bigger and bigger parts, and one of those parts was as the daughter of Danny Thomas in the series Make Room for Daddy. She did not get that part largely because her nose did not quite fit the Lebanese Danny Thomas image, and nobody would believe it. But she did make an impression, and when the Dick Van Dyke Show was coming into inception, Danny Thomas remembered and strongly suggested her for the role of Laura, and the rest is history.
And that's quite ironic because the two people that made Make Room for Daddy Go, Sheldon Leonard, the executive producer, and Thomas, were both, of course, big players with Carl Reiner in the Dick Van Dyke Show.
That's correct. You got it.
Mm-hmm. How did Mary Tyler Moore go from being a actress on Dick Van Dyke to not only launching the Mary Tyler Moore Show as a star, but also at the same time launching MTM Enterprises?
Well, basically Mary had reached a point in her career where she was basically trying to improve herself professionally. Personally, she was kind of in an unusual and uncomfortable situation. She was just coming out of a very early marriage that produced one son, but ended because she basically outgrew the marriage. As she got bigger in her career, personal life, and her marriage began to suffer. At that point, Mary crossed paths with Grant Tinker. It was a professional and a personal love match. They were completely head over heels for each other, almost from the word go. At one point, Tinker, who was a big player at that point with NBC and a lot of the other networks, decided it might be interesting to get Mary Heron's show. And he might want it, and he thought it would be a good idea to start their own production company to kind of grease the wheels to get a show on the networks. That's when MTM Enterprises came into being. And the first show out of the box was the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
When she started this company with Tinker, was she aware about Lucille Ball and the track record she had, being the only woman that really turned a production company into a gigantic force for television?
You know, I'll be honest with you, I don't know. But Mary was very aware. She sometimes came off as being, to the public, a little bit homespun and maybe a little naive, but she was real hip to what was going on in the business, so she probably knew. Whether that impacted her and Tinker's starting their own company and basically taking charge of their own lives and their business, you know, it's hard to tell, but I would say it'd be impossible not to be influenced by Lucille Ball.
We're speaking with Mark Shapiro. He is the author of the new biography about Mary Tyler Moore, who passed away over a year ago at the age of 80. The biography is called You're Going to Make It After All, about the life on and off camera of Mary Tyler Moore. He is with us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. I'm Apple Band with you live from New York here on Blog Talk Radio and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for Mark, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, TimeAnApple04 by name. Second of three episodes we're doing this week. That's happening today. And we'll be back on Friday at our regular time. Big 9-minute show for you. First of all, rescheduled from last week, we'll have Christy Henderson. She is the leader of Color of Change's Hollywood Project, expanded mercy on television. And then we'll have people from a group called Pop Culture Collaborative, which is actually awarding grants to organizations that are out to expand mercy on television, one of them being Issa Rae's Color Creative and another being Unleashing Giants. We'll have people from all three on the program. And finally, from the brand-new TV One movie, Behind the Movement, The Rosa Parks Story, writer Katrina O'Gilby. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow will be televised. Why was the Mary Tyler Moore Show so empowering for women and so impactful?
Well, I think it was pretty much the luck of the draw. When Mary Tyler Moore Show came into being, the producers of the show were very progressive in their thinking. They wanted to make this not the typical 50s, 60s sitcom where the woman runs around in a prom dress vacuuming the living room floor. They wanted somebody who would reflect on the real world for women, the struggles, the personal and professional challenges. It was a hard sell. There was a number of back and forths between the more tradition-bound people at the networks who wanted to keep the stereotype of keeping the women in the home and housewives very much the same. But Tinker and Moore were very persistent in wanting to do something that reflected the real world. And after a real hard-fought struggle, Mary Tyler Moore Show came into being, and it reflected very much, almost shockingly so, what women were doing and experiencing and the travails, and it was an immediate attraction. I mean, women flocked to it, men as well, but women specifically, it was like looking in a mirror in a way. They were seeing what could be for them.
How much of a hand did Mary play in the ensemble cast, getting people like Ed Asner and Valerie Harper and Cloris Leachman and Ted Knight, and Gavin McLeod, et cetera, who all came from various backgrounds? In the case of Ed Asner, dramatic episodic television. In the case of Valerie Harper, story theater and improv comedy. In the case of Ted Knight, cartoon voiceovers on ABC's Journey to the Center of the Earth, for example, as well as episodic TV role.
Mm-hmm. She obviously was a producer as well, and, you know, bottom line, people had to get along on set with Mary, but Mary was very easygoing. She could sense a family growing when that show was created. There was no hard and fast rules, but she instinctively knew who was coming through the casting door, who would work, who she could play off of, who they could play off of her. Mary gets a lot of the credit for the show, but at the end of the day, the Mary Tyler Moore Show was very much an ensemble cast. Everybody, as we saw in the post-Mary Tyler Moore Show, had the chops to carry their own shows, and a lot of them went on and did just that. But it was very much a family. It almost sounds like a cliche, but the Mary Tyler Moore Show, from the producers to the writers, it was very much a family situation. Mary's show was making history along the way because for the first time, a large percentage of the writers were women. The stories consequently reflected real-world issues for women. It was a show that just captured the fantasy and the fancy of people who saw all of a sudden television maybe becoming more mature and more coming of age. The show, during its run, was never number one in the ratings, always consistently a top 20 show. But it almost went beyond the ratings. The things that were happening for women during that time, the women's movement was taking off like nobody's business. And whether Mary liked it or not, and I think she was probably reluctant to a degree, she had become a standard bearer for the women's movement.
You know, Mark, in interviews I've seen throughout Moore's career, she rarely talked about the other shows in the stable of Mary Tyler Moore Enterprises, whether it was Rhoda, whether it was Bob Newhart's show or Newhart, whether it was Hill Street Blues, The White Shadow, Saint Elsewhere. What did she think about the tremendous volume of impactful programming? And in some cases, like, for example, in the case of in drama, Hill Street Blues and Saint Elsewhere, really groundbreaking television that came out of that, and Lou Grant that came out of MTM.
Right. When she would talk about the other shows in the stable, she was to a fault proud. She knew that she was part of something that was making history in television. These were shows that were breaking taboos just about every week, every episode. We were seeing things on TV all of a sudden that had never been seen before, and she was quite proud of the fact that she was part and parcel of the creation of those shows.
Mm-hmm. Was there one program that she particularly pointed to as, like, I want to be remembered for making that, or I want to be remembered for making the Bob Newhart show happen, or making, aside from Mary Tyler Moore, making Hill Street Blues happen, making St. Elsewhere happen, making Newhart happen, a show that she was particularly proud of?
It'll almost sound like a cop-out, but every show that made it to the air under the MTM banner was quality. She would never find any of those shows, and in their own way, any less than the other. That was a real golden age, and Mary Tyler Moore's production company was part and parcel of that. The shows were uniformly good. If you were old enough to remember seeing those shows for the first time back in the day, you were completely knocked on your keister because the quality was just so high. There was never a show that came on that did not have the Mary Tyler Moore stamp of approval in terms of quality.
Well, I've talked about, Mark, for years, the fact that in my second year covering television, I saw the pilot for Hill Street Blues when NBC had their upfront event. And that was the one that they showed in its entirety, that wonderful opening pilot episode directed by Robert Butler, with Daniel DeVito,
right,
and so forth. It had the killing of the two cops, which was one of the two of the big co-stars of the show. And I still remember Bob Mulahan, at that time the head of NBC, going up after the credits were rolling and everybody was dead silent, walking up to the side of the screen, pointing his finger and saying, "That's a hell of a piece of film." And you knew this was the show that everyone was going to talk about. And I still think Hill Street Blues is one of the great all-time classics in television because of the groundbreaking way it was done, because of the idea of writing teams, because of story arcs that ran three or four episodes at a time. It's just like everything about the show was the handheld camera work was totally different.
Yeah, and that show is a perfect example. But to a show, taking chances, surprising the audience, superb writing, superb acting. I mean, you saw a lot of people getting their first shots on those shows that would go on to do, you know, great things. But it was like the Mary Tyler Moore banner meant quality. If you were just going to approach Mary Tyler Moore with an idea for something that was just, you know, more of the same stuff that had been 20 times, and you could predict by 10 minutes into the show what was going to happen, it never got on the air. I'm sure if somebody did some research, there were a lot of things that the MTM banner, you know, rejected because they were not taking that chance. And that was pretty much Mary Tyler Moore's life. She was about fighting the system in her own quiet way, of course, taking chances, and being the best performer she could be, the best producer she could be. I mean, if there was a problem with something she was involved with, she would say so. Her history shows that she walked off a couple of shows in the later stages of her career, which were doing reasonably well with the ratings, but she had constant creative run-ins with producers. And rather than, you know, just do it for the bucks and ride it out, she basically went up to the networks and said, "I'm walking." And she did walk on two different occasions. And it was a perfect example of the type of person she was. She came up with a hard scrabble life, and it reflects in her determination as a star.
Was there a Mary Tyler Moore produced show that did not run long that she wished could have? That, you know, on second guess, I wish we could have fought for this show more, or I wish we could have gotten a second season, let's say.
Well, it's funny because everything she did post Mary Tyler Moore show, as far as TV went, the series themselves were up and down, and it's like she could sense if the quality wasn't there, it was time to walk away. But on the same level, when she did television's miniseries, like the Lincoln series, when she did some really underappreciated movies of the week for which she won Emmys, she was in 100%. If she was stepping in front of the camera for the first scene of the first episode or the first scene in the miniseries, I mean, she was there. And a lot of times people would look askance at what she did. There was a movie for television way back in the 80s, I'm pretty sure at this point, that she so totally against hype that people were saying, you know, "You're going to kill your career." It was a movie called Stolen Babies. She played
that.
Yeah, there you go. And she basically took the whole idea of you could turn the world on with a smile, that whole concept people had of her, totally inside out and upside down. She played one of the most vile, evil characters you're ever going to see. And she did it with such conviction. I mean, the talent was obviously there, but her willingness to stretch that way. There was another film called Like Mother, Like Son, where she played the mother of a mother-son crime team. She showed with those two movies alone that she could step out of whatever perceived stereotype there was of her. Obviously, Ordinary People is what people remember, but it would be well worth your while to go back and check over her filmography. You probably will see things you may either have never seen or it's been years. And to refresh your memory of how good an actress Mary Tyler Moore was, it'd be well worth your time.
Yeah. And by the way, Stolen Babies was done for Lifetime. It was one of the first stars of that caliber, by the way, Mary Tyler Moore, who did a film for that network. Mark Shapiro is with us, and he is the author of the brand new Mary Tyler Moore biography book. It's called You're Going to Make It After All. And by the way, it is published by the fine folks at Riverdale Avenue Books. And in a moment, we're going to tell you about our classic trivia question winner who answered a Mary Tyler Moore question. And by the way, it's a very interesting MTM story of his own. And we'll get to that shortly. This is Tomorrow Be Televised, the program All About the Tube. Simon Appleband with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment in our remaining minutes with Mark, give us that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04x8. Another 90-minute episode of our show is coming your way on Monday, and boy, we got a lot of good people for you. We're going to first of all showcase a project we've been waiting to for a long time, the Sundance Institute's Episodic Television Lab. We will have Jennifer Gain-Blake, the senior manager of that project, with us. And then Beat the Clock is back, one of the great all-time classic game shows, started last night, a Monday-Thursday run on Universal Kids. We got an exclusive interview with executive producer Joni Day. And finally, the showrunner of Unreal, the popular Peabody Award-winning Lifetime series, which starts Season 3 later this month, is with us. She's the daughter of Louis Rukeyser of Wall Street Week fame. Yes, Stacey Rukeyser will join us. That's all coming Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific right here. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Did Moore find it fascinating that as her TV career went on, she was doing more great work in miniseries than, at least with the public, with series? because it seems that after the Mary Tyler Moore Show, whether she was trying a variety show like Mary, which actually was ahead of its time in terms of not only what she did, but the repertory couple like David Letterman that she got involved with, or a name, or a show like New York News, did not turn out so well. It was like the miniseries and the movies that really turned out very well for her.
Right. And it's interesting because Mary's career is marked by the fact that she did films. She had some great ones. She had a lot of forgettable ones. She had the infamous Change of Habit with Elvis Presley. What it turned out was that she liked television. She liked the vibe, the atmosphere, the comfort level television provided her. And she kept, no matter what she was making, a series or a miniseries or a two-movie for television, she just liked it, and she kept returning to it. It was her television was always her comfort zone, which is why, to the very end, in her last live performance on television was Hot in Cleveland. She in a creative sense, she kept returning to the womb. She loved television. She loved what television had done for her life and her career, and at the end of the day, she just wanted to feel at ease, and television was where she felt at ease.
Now, early in our interview, Mark mentioned Lincoln, which was the only television miniseries that Mary Tyler Moore ever did. And in fact, that was the answer to this week's classic trivia question. Name the only TV miniseries starring Mary Tyler Moore. And we told you at the time, that on Monday, that her first named character was Mary. In fact, it was, because in that program, which won several Emmy Awards, including one for directing by Lamont Johnson, brilliant director, by the way, both film and television, Mary Tyler Moore played Mary Todd Lincoln. Well, guess what? We have a winner for that classic trivia question, and that person is going to win a copy of Mark's book and a Zmundo notepad. And that person is someone we've had on this program before, Ed Martin. He's a popular TV critic for MediaVillage.com, like me, a fellow columnist there. He's also one of the key people now at the Broadcast Cable Critics Association, the most likely the annual Critics' Choice Awards. It was on some time back, I believe, on the CW. And he is based in Milford, Connecticut, and he's close to where Mary Tyler Moore was buried last year. In fact, her cemetery plot is near his family's plot. It really is astonishing and amazing. So anyway, Ed, congratulations. You got the question right. Lincoln, by the way, was presented in 1988 on NBC, and again directed by Lamont Johnson. Mary Tyler Moore was nominated for an Emmy for her role. So was Ruby Dee as well in a supporting role. So, Ed, you're going to get a copy of Mark's book soon, and I know that Mark, me, is very excited about that and wanted to pass along that very unique trivia. Mark, you there?
Yes, I am. Go ahead.
I was just saying, I think it's quite a unique trivia that his family plot is near where Moore is buried in Milford.
Right. I think it's Fairfield, correct?
Yeah. Fairfield County.
Yep.
By the way, one of the things I wanted to mention is that one of her best performances, I thought, was in the movie First You Cry, based on the book by a former NBC correspondent, Betty Rollin, where she plays that journalist who was one of the first to go that she had breast cancer and to deal with it both privately and publicly. And it was a wonderful performance and a very gut-filled performance for her.
Yeah, and then it was one of her early attempts at breaking the mold as far as movies for television went. Again, that was a heavy dramatic thing. You know, there was nothing of the Mary Tyler Moore Show character or the Laura Petrie Show from Dick Van Dyke. It was like she found the best period. She found the best role she could felt that she could handle. And it didn't scare her that it was very dramatic, very un-Mary Tyler Moore. Like, she just, you know, went for it. And you see the results. So it's a great film.
How do you hope from your book that people will remember Mary Tyler Moore, both what she did in front of the camera and even maybe more so what she did outside of the camera with MTM Enterprises?
It's the classic combination of talent, drive, and determination. Mary Tyler Moore is remembered for certain things more than others. But what a lot of people should take away from this book and by association her legacy is the fact she was a very determined, a fighter, a groundbreaker. And it kind of sounds, I mean, it sounds almost cliche, but there are people like that who come along every once in a while who have the talent, have the drive, and that's what I would hope people take away from it, that, you know, the whole tagline from the song from the show, you're going to make it after all, Well, that's what people should look to. They should look to Mary Tyler Moore as the person who made it, and if they decide they want to follow in her footsteps or do anything, they can make it as well. And I'm sure if Mary were around today, she would agree with it.
Mm-hmm. And her great legacy is that many of her shows, Dick Van Dyke Show, Mary Tyler Moore Show, Bob Newhart Show, Newhart, Rhoda, those people, et cetera, they're still being seen all over the world, and they're being loved for the talent that she had and the talent she saw in other people as well, women and men alike. You're going to make it after all. That's the book about Mary Tyler Moore. You can find it through Amazon, bookstores around the country. And if you want more details about the book, it's available online at RiverdaleAvBooks.com. That's RiverdaleAvBooks.com. Riverdale Avenue Press, the people who put the book together. Mark Shapiro, the author of the book, thank you again for joining us. Pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you for a great conversation, and all the best to you in whatever you do in the future.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Mark. Take care.
Bye now.
Mark Shapiro, the author of You're Going to Make It After All, the biography of Mary Tyler Moore, available now. Joining us live from Los Angeles. What's Marvy Tovide coming your way? But first, we're going to pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com. Well, the 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the Old Man Swap Shop. Check it out this Saturday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome back to the Marvin Televised, second half of this hour on this Wednesday afternoon, February 7th, 2018. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. More great guests coming away from L.A. in this half hour. If you have a question or a comment, just give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. We'll get to our guests from L.A. after we post some words from the funny people at Audible.com. If you're in the mood for a suspense thriller, how about this one to taste your ears? It's called Harry Clark by David Cale, and it's narrated by the wonderful Tony-nominated actor Billy Crudup. And Cale himself does the narration, too. And you can get it right now through a trial run with Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital entertainment information. Over 108,000 titles to choose from. And you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio or iHeartRadio. So all you need to do is go to this URL, audibletrial.com/televised, pick one free audiobook, get a 30-day, one-month trial, and enjoy. And find out for yourself why Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. Because Audible.com, listening is the new reading. Audibletrial.com/televised. Tomorrow, Crackle will unveil its newest original film from that Sony service available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. It's called In the Cloud, and it might just take a combination of artificial intelligence, virtual reality, and two brothers to get their acts together and defeat a terrorist who is threatening all sorts of people all around the world. Joining us live from Los Angeles, the executive producers of this Crackle movie, Ryan Cavanaugh-Jones, and former MTV and NBC former executive Justin Levy. Ryan and Justin, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having us. Yeah.
It is a pleasure. Brian, we'll start with you. How long is In the Cloud been making for?
That's a good question. I think it's been about a year and a half. It was a script that Vanya Asher brought to us, and we flipped out for, and Crackle very quickly fell in love with it and greenlit it. So it wasn't as long in gestation as many of these movies and television shows can be.
Justin, what intrigued you about the plot? I mean, we've had a lot of films, a lot of television made for movies and TV series that have a spy, a counter-spy, a terrorism angle to it. But this is one of the first that combines both artificial intelligence, which is a hot du jour right now in television, in terms of what smart TV sets and smart TV devices can do, ironically, and virtual reality. What about where both of these technologies, processes can go, along with this situation of a terrorist who just bombs it all over the world? What intrigued you to make this film?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, listen, I'm fascinated by I'm fascinated by memory and the sort of the untruths that we believe that become facts in our minds over time. The fact that, you know, technology is sort of creating I think in real life, technology is creating a way for sort of humans to tackle their own brains, if you will, is incredibly fascinating. And, as we were just sort of looking for a way to, like, you know, have that play out with stakes and excitement, I don't think there's anything, you know, sort of more of the moment, unfortunately, than, you know, than the subject that we took on. I mean, the, you know, we imagine this as like the heroes that everybody would want to have in the world right now.
And Brian, I saw the beginning of the film earlier this morning, and it's fascinating to me how you begin this movie showcasing this terrorist who comes across calm, cool, and deadly, but also you have this demonstration of a virtual human brain and somebody, I think it's a remarkable scene, walking their way into the brain and showcasing, well, here's where Bing happens, here's where that happens. I'm curious what kind of, in doing that scene, what kind of reaction was there to the people in the audience who watched this, watched this presentation, but also how it turned out on film?
I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I don't quite understand the question. You're asking how the audience, like the actors in the audience, reacted, or are you talking about how audience general reacted?
The actors in the audience reacted, but also everybody really reacted to this idea of you could visualize a brain on a stage and have someone walking through it. I think it was a very, very daring, in a way, a very daring scene.
Yeah, with Gabriel Byrne, yeah, it was, you know, I think the joy of this, which Justin sort of spoke about, is science fiction speaking about and dealing with issues that we're all dealing with today and trying to sort of build in an aspirational quality to it of being able to use the best of what we're learning in technology and sort of the cutting edge of it and the 2 days in the future kind of experience to find and solve today's problems. And I think that, look, the what I'm so interested in is both the internal and the external, right? You have this sort of experience of getting to look at the brain, which is still a total mystery to all to scientists everywhere, and be able to say, if we can map it, if we can solve it, if we can break that code, what are we all capable of? And I hope that really came across in that scene. It was certainly our intention. Is you know, you're in the same way that we haven't explored all of the depths of the ocean or even close. I think that in the same way we haven't explored all of the depths of what humans are capable of and what brains are capable of and all the rest. So that's certainly, I think, where Vanya came at it.
Yeah. Justin, what does the film say about where we are going as a society with virtual reality and with artificial intelligence? On this program, for example, we are now talking about the fact that you can now have artificial intelligence built into smart television sets, built into smart TV devices, so you can stand up, sit down, lean forward, and bark at the TV set, you know, Alexa, give me a ride on Uber, or Google Assistant, turn my lights on and off. And in the case of virtual reality, it's still a mixed bag out there, but there are people who still think that VR, whether you do it in the headset or with glasses or even put on the television set, there is a big future for that. In television,
you know, the film itself, I think we took a pretty, you know, we sort of stood in the middle and showed you the good and the bad of it. You know, I think it was really important to Vanya and to us. Obviously, like, we're fans of technology. Vanya's a huge fan of technology, and the idea that we're creating technologies that can be used to, you know, in many different ways, save the world, I think is progress is important. That said, you know, we speak a lot in the film to privacy, what it means to sort of turn over your memories to government agencies, and how these technologies can be used, you know, against us. And, you know, much in the ways that we fear for our privacy now with technology, a different version of technology, you know, we wanted to make sure that we're sort of talking about that too, because I, you know, there's a danger to these things, and I don't think anybody wants to, you know, find themselves down that path before they realize, you know, before they sort of realize we got too far.
You're hearing Brian Kavanaugh Jones and Justin Levy. They're the executive producers of Cracko's new original film. It's called In the Cloud. It premieres tomorrow on that service, which is available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. The vote drawing is live this half hour from Los Angeles on Tomorrow Be Televised. I'm Applebaum with you live from New York. Happy you're with us. 33 degrees and raining here in the New York metro area at this hour. You have a question or comment for our guests? Speak up and call in at 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up a week from Friday on this program, my lead guest will be the primetime host of Turner Classic Movies, Ben Mankiewicz. We'll talk about TCM's current campaign, 31 Days of Oscar. We'll get his thoughts maybe about the Oscars coming up, show, and the nominees, and maybe a lot more, too. Ben Mankiewicz from TCM, live with us a week from Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Brian, when we're talking about this movie In the Cloud, you're also introducing a very interesting concept, this idea of a memory cloud. Explain that and how it plays a big role in the film.
Sorry, Justin, do you want to take that one?
Sure. I mean, you know, the let me jump back because there's a, you know, from a process standpoint, the version that Vanya wrote initially sort of was much more progressed in the story, and as part of the development process with Crackle, we kind of stepped back and showed the birth of the technology. So, you know, we really are only in the end, by the end of the movie, sort of getting in, starting to touch on the notion of what it would mean to upload your consciousness into a cloud, which is kind of like the next generation of the tech. The movie really concentrates a lot more on sort of diving into people's memories and using virtual reality and artificial intelligence to kind of decode that. But certainly, you know, the next level of that technology would be, you know, sort of, and is at the end, creating this cloud, creating this sort of store of consciousness. And what does that mean? I mean, honestly, we have had hours and hours of conversation in the development of the process. I could go into it now, but, you know, is that a virtual afterlife? I don't know, but that's sort of one version of it. Is that the end of all secrets? Is it the end of privacy? I don't know, but it's fun to explore.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, either of you, who is Vanya? Just to let our audience who Vanya is and that person's role in the movie.
Sorry, Vanya Asher is the writer and the creator of the movie, and came up with this whole fun world that we're getting to explore. So that's who Vanya Asher is.
Is this Vanya's first television work? What was his or her background?
Yeah, he was an actor before this, and he wrote this script, and both Jess and I read it and went, holy moly, you're not only a really talented actor, but also you absolutely are an excellent writer, and it has proven out in both this movie and how he came up with this, and also, you know, I think Justin and I are nowhere near as smart as he is, because he not only built this world out, but also got to really go deep dive into the technology and both what is possible and what is coming. And as Justin said, it was a really fun world to get to play in, and to play in a lot of what ifs. When you start thinking about sort of the best of science fiction writers, the Philip K. Dicks and the Robert Heinleins, and you suddenly, and the Ray Bradburys, I think he has absolutely taken on a big what if scenario that is, as Justin sort of pointed out, is on all of our collective sort of conscious and unconsciousness of what is privacy, and how are we all connected to a big sort of virtual discussion with our iPhones and our TVs and our smart devices. And I think that, like, this is just the natural progression of that. And I agree with Justin. Vanya wants to explore in this movie and continue to explore, you know, the both the good and the bad of that, the what ifs of that, and how it can both go really right and terribly wrong.
Glenn or Justin, how did you come up with the actors who play the brothers, who are sort of estranged at the beginning of the movie, and then by circumstance they have to come together and combat this terrorist?
How did we find them? I mean,
yeah.
Brian, I'll let you speak to Tomiwa because I know he was a personal favorite of yours. Justin Chatwin, as far as I'm concerned, like, I've been just a fan of his since Shameless, and when it was brought to our attention that he might be available, like, you know, just jumped at the chance and thrilled to have had the opportunity to work with him.
And Tommy Wa Adun is a phenomenal actor out of the UK. Comes out of theater work, and honestly read for the role and won us all over. He is an astounding up and coming actor that we think is gonna do really big things.
And in fact, Tommy Wa Adun, who just mentioned Brian and Justin, plays a role in this VR app that actually Crackle will release before releasing the film tomorrow. And I'm curious, have you either of you heard any reaction from the public to that VR app?
I haven't heard a reaction from the public yet, no, but it looks very cool. I'm excited to hear what they say.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is available, by the way, so check it out. I think it's on Oculus and also other VR platforms. And Tommy Wa plays somebody who also takes somebody who uses that app on a excursion to the human brain. So it's very interesting how the human brain just keeps on appearing in the course of this film or in some of the ways that the film is being promoted. It's like brain power, brain power, brain power.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Couldn't have said it better.
In the Crowd is the new original movie that Crackle is putting together, and you can find it on your smart TV set or smart TV device starting tomorrow morning. We've got the two executive producers of the program, and that's Brian Cavanaugh-Jones and Justin Levy, and they are coming to us live from Los Angeles half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. In a moment, we're going to talk about how we're going to be doing more things together. I'll explain that in a bit. If you have a question or comment for Brian and Justin, give us that call. What you got to do is use that phone and this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, coming up on our program on Friday, we will have the people behind Color of Change's Hollywood Project. We're talking about director Kirstie Henderson. And then we'll go into the Pop Culture Collaborative. It's a very big organization that is giving grants to organizations, to ventures, that are actually trying to expand diversity on television, film, music, all over the place. We'll have people from the collaborative, and we'll spotlight two of the organizations that have just gotten grant money a few weeks ago. One is Issa Rae's Color Creative, which has been around for several years, and another is a very interesting venture called Unleashing Giants. That's the name of the venture. Unleashing Giants. That's all coming up, along with the writer of the new TV One film coming out this weekend in honor of Black History Month, Behind the Movement, the Rosa Parks story, talking about Katrina O'Gilvy. And wait till you hear about the big surprise that both cast and crew had in making this film. It really is a stunning surprise. You'll hear about it Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Justin, yesterday there was an announcement that you and Brian are going to be doing a lot more together because you have joined Brian's company, which is called Automatic, in a very special role. Tell us about it.
I've joined Brian and Automatic, and I'll be handling the TV department and TV projects moving forward. It's really exciting.
And Brian, what are some of those TV projects that your production company is working on?
We have a lot. Unfortunately, a lot of it hasn't been announced yet, so we have to be a little bit quiet. But one of our partners, Fred Berger, just is in the midst of putting together a show with Damien Chazelle that was just announced that MRC and Apple are doing. So certainly in the world of what we do in movies, we're transferring over, I think, all of that knowledge and expertise to our film side. So hopefully we get to work with a lot of the great filmmakers we've worked with in the past on film side and television.
Mm-hmm. Frank, by the way, was one of the executive producers on La La Land. Saw that film. Was a great friend on my birthday last year. Loved it. Wish it won more Oscars. Happy it got the ones that it did. And I thought they were so classy. The producer was so classy with the situation with the Oscar snafu where Moonlight won Best Picture. But any clues about what Damien is going to do for Apple? It seems that Apple made the announcement without saying much about what kind of show Damon's going to do.
I really, truly don't know. But I'm looking forward to hearing and finding out. It's all top secret, and they're doing their thing. But I can't wait to find out, too. I'm going to be the first one in the seat to see it.
Mm-hmm. Hope so, too. And I know he's also working on a Netflix project that he'll be directing, I think, the first two episodes of and helping to create. Justin, I don't know if you've had time to be with Damien, but what do you make of his work? He just seems to be a filmmaker that is as independent and as groundbreaking as anybody out there.
No, I haven't had the chance to sit down with him, but I'd like to. I mean, he's an auteur for our generation, and I think the guy. I'm a huge fan of all his work, and I'm really excited that Fred and he have put this Apple project together. I think it's going to be great.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, with you and Justin together at Automatic, what do you think of this era of television, this era of what I call plentiful TV, where you have so many places to put a television series on the air, whether it's Netflix, it's Crackle, it's Amazon, it's Hulu, it's the broadcast networks, it's cable networks, it's Apple, it's Facebook Watch. It just seems that Vimeo, so many places to put a television show on the air, so many ways to do a television show. And it just seems that everybody and mother, grandmother, father, and kids want to be part of this growing medium.
I think it's really exciting. I think, the good news is I think content, both on the film and the television side, are more in demand than they have been, in a long time. And it gives artists a real avenue to get to make more groundbreaking, exciting things. So I'm really thrilled about it, and certainly the writers and the filmmakers we're working with are excited. And it's the good news is when you look at people like Damien or other filmmakers that Cary Fukunaga, a lot of phenomenal filmmakers are diving into television these days. It's fun to see people really pushing the bounds of what's possible. So I just think it is a huge opportunity for people like us who get to support great artists to make, I hope, really fantastic television.
And Justin, what you've had experience with NBC, you've had experience with MTV, you were part of the group that put together such shows as Teen Wolf, Awkward, who's created, by the way, is also working on a new show coming out hopefully soon. What's it been like to work with an organization like Crackle and Sony that have also made some, I think, some big inroads in terms of pushing the envelope with great television?
Yeah, listen, it's fun to just be at a place that's like willing to take risks. I mean, we made a show that heavily features VR, and they dove right in and built a VR experience, and it's. And luckily, they've got a platform that their viewers are already familiar with, where they can watch the VR experience, so they're able to roll it out. I mean, these are the kinds of things that we talked about for years in various different jobs that I held, but never really had a way to have that sort of direct line to the viewer, both for the show itself and for all these other ways to experience. A television show.
For either one of you, what do you hope viewers will get by being entertained? What do you hope that they get as a message out of In the Cloud in terms of how we live society and how we deal with these new factors of technology, some of which we are now exploring on our show, in terms of how it impacts television, artificial intelligence, virtual reality, augmented reality, blockchain, cryptocurrency. It just seems sometimes like a new technology or a new process with possibilities and consequences for TV, not to mention everything else in society, pop like almost every hour.
Yeah, listen, I think we just want to raise the questions. Like I said before, we're fans of technology. The show is written from a fan of technology. We believe that that the future will be better thanks to technology. But I think people have to ask questions. We're getting information from a lot of different sources right now. And it's all presented as facts that weigh on equal levels. And I think, we want We want to raise the questions so that the audience remembers to ask them, so that we don't get, you know, we don't find ourselves years from now in a position that we could have prevented if we had just been a little more thoughtful as we approach them.
In the Cloud, original movie coming your way tomorrow morning on Crackle, owned by Sony, and available on most smart TV sets and more smart TV devices, whether it is Roku, Amazon Fire, Google Chromecast, NVIDIA Shield, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So check them out. And if you want to know more about the film, here's where you go, www.crackle.com, www.crackle.com. Crackle, once again, owned by Sony. Brian Kavanaugh-Jones, Justin Levy, thank you both very much for joining us. Justin, congratulations on your new role with Brian's company on Amazing. All the best to both of you. Look forward to hopefully great success with the film. And we'd love to have you back as more projects come your way and then our way.
Thank you. Look
Thanks
forward
so
to
much for having us.
Our pleasure. Brian and Justin, take care. All the greatest.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Brian Kavanaugh-Jones and Justin Levy, executive producer of In the Crowd from Crackle, joining us live from Los Angeles. I want to thank all of our guests for being with us this hour, and thank all of you for listening. Come back with us on Friday. We have a big animated show for you, where we're going to showcase a lot of ways that diversity on television is expanding. First up, Christy Henderson. She is the leader of Color of Change's Hollywood Project, and then the people behind the Pop Culture Collaborative and two of the ventures that they are funding, Unleashing Giants and Issa Rae's Color Creative. And finally, from the new TV One movie coming out this weekend, Behind the Movement, The Rosa Parks Story, writer Katrina O'Gilry. That's all coming up Friday, 3:30 Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow Televised. If you came in late on today's program and want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, we're available 24/7 in podcasts on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, on iTunes, and on Apple TV's iTunes Podcast app. Love to hear what you think about our program and the subject that we raise. So email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's how you get involved in our classic trivia question of the week. We'll have a new question for you on Monday's episode. And if you use that email with the correct answer, you just might win, as Ben Martin of Milford, Connecticut did earlier today. And remember, you can also find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and wherever you communicate. Remember, we love hearing from you, and we respond. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not through the Blog Talk Radio or iHeartRadio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. And he's known as Blog Talk Radio General Manager, with Jay Sundberg, Executive Content Producer, the co-founder of the BTR, Al Levy, and Bob Charish. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For a one-month trial, free audio book, great customer service too, audibletrial.com/televise. But Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your midweek. We'll be back less than 48 hours from now. Friday, 3:30 Eastern, New Pacific, night in addition, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Remember, in your area that's having the snow and the ice and the heavy rain, please be careful out there. Check on your loved ones. And if you're traveling, make sure you call your carrier before you drive or ride the rails or use the planes. Again, we're back Friday, 3:30 Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Please be safe and be great out there. And until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.